Welcome to 60 Scales and the Truth, a podcast where amazing guitar players reflect on their lives and on how they got where they are today. My name is Niels Guns. I'm a journalist, podcast maker, and a guitar fanatic. Thanks for tuning in. My very first guest in this podcast series is a man who stars only rising. One of the grooviest players out there. A man who sees himself as the result of bringing together Zapp and Roger, George Clinton, Eddie Van Halen, and a baritone guitar in the room. Welcome to this episode, Mark Lettieri.
Thanks, Niels.
Did you ever really envision that, those guys in one room?
I think so. Yes, in my brain at least. I think the deeper I got into guitar and music in general, I loosely started envisioning kind of the sound that I was always sort of chasing and wanting to craft. And I think, in fact, I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine in high school. We were maybe 17. And I think I said to him something like, man, one of these days I want to have a band where it's like George Clinton, but with Steve Vai on guitar.
Ah.
And I am neither of those people, but I think, influence wise, the idea of heavy groove and that R&B funk vibe and language mixed with, you know, the kind of heavy, fun, freewheeling guitar playing that I like as well, you know, and kind of blending all those worlds together and in my own way, not to say that I'm doing anything new or groundbreaking or anything, but taking those concepts and putting my own spin on them, I think is what I've always wanted to do.
But is it also, because if I listen to your music, I hear also a mix of exploring and an adventure, but also enjoyable to listen.
Well, good,
you get
thanks.
What I mean? Like yeah, but because if you say George Clinton and Steve Vai, like Steve Vai is an explorer, right?
Sure, yeah.
George Clinton too, but it's also about like dancing, about like well, do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I do, yeah. And I think, you know, I've always been a disciple to the groove or something. I don't want to sound like something you put on a bumper sticker, but
yeah,
I've always been very influenced by great groove. And that doesn't necessarily mean funk. I mean, rock has a specific groove, but just being, you know, or jazz or whatever, but just being aware of what that is and how that feels. And if I'm going to put forth a specific feel, it's got to be right. And all the instruments that are serving that feel and that groove need to be right where they should be in the pocket, doing what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of my North Star every time I write a song, you know, it's got to feel right. And then I'm sort of thinking about melody and harmony and arrangement and that kind of thing. But I think the feel is really the first thing that I gravitate towards. And so,
is that a reflection of your personality as well?
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, you know, you can be a thinker or somebody who goes for the gut feeling, right?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think maybe it is. I my musical upbringing is sort of like half self-taught, half, instruction, professional instruction. And so I draw upon both of those worlds to kind of get where I need to go. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes if something just sounds right, feels good, I don't care what's going on theoretically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why?
In fact, most of the time it's usually I have to figure out what I'm going to play over this thing that I just wrote.
Yeah.
and then analyze it from a theoretical perspective. But I guess maybe it is a reflection of my person. I never really thought about that. It's a good question.
Because I think music is always in some way a reflection of your personality,
absolutely,
right? But I'm just curious, how do you hear that? And how are you in daily life, right? Mm-hmm. Are you also a person that goes with a gut feeling and then afterwards I'll think about what just happens? Or
well, I think in life I've learned to trust my internal instincts and gut and things like that. And maybe that influences how I compose. And I guess you're right. It probably does, because at the end of the day, I'm making music that I would want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if I'm making it from an honest place, like a place where I've trusted my instinct, people respect that and maybe can pick up on that.
You hear it, right?
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I think I definitely know when I've written something that doesn't reflect who I am versus when I've written something that does. Mm-hmm. And usually the things that do reflect who I am are the stuff that I end up keeping and putting on albums.
And
the other things I go, I don't know what I was trying to be somebody else here or something like that.
But would you agree if as a listener, you can also tell in some way, right? Like, did he or she write this with the audience in mind or with just with that expressional urge, so to say, right?
Yeah. And I think when you are writing music, you almost can't write with your audience in mind because you just, your audience will come based on you writing for you, if that makes sense.
So if you have to write
in a way that has integrity, and then people will come to that because they respond to that integrity. You'd spend your entire life trying to chase an audience, right? I've chosen not to do that. And maybe I should, maybe
well,
but or something, but who cares?
Like, because you said prior to me pressing a record button, don't mention it, but you're gonna be 40 in a little while. Sorry,
I said not to mention that. I'm out of here. Podcast.
Sorry, at some point you will be 40.
At
nobody knows when.
Yeah,
but that's also you said, well, maybe I should, but if I look at your career, like I said in the beginning, like your stars rise and you're doing more interesting stuff.
I think so.
Right? It's how you reflect upon your career.
I agree. I mean, it's definitely taken some shifts and things like that. And I generally don't talk about age because...
Sorry.
It's just, we all kind of have different metrics for where we want to be at certain points in our career. Would I have wanted to be where I am now at 29? Maybe. Probably. But it took me till later to get there. And that's just the way it is. And that's just based on the circumstances and the choices that I made. And I don't regret anything. I've learned from all of my mistakes, and I don't think I've made any choices that have made me go, man, I really wish I didn't do that. I mean, beyond very small, insignificant things. but in terms of career, I am where I am, and that's the way it is. And I guess maybe on a personal note, like now that I'm a husband and a father and things like that, it's harder to be on the road. So there's a part of me that thinks, oh man, I wish I'd had all this going on at 27 when I wasn't either of those things. And maybe I've had more time to do that, but
changes everything, right?
Changes everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is, I think, would I be making the quality of music that I am now, 15 years ago? Probably not, because I would have had to go through those 15 years or so to get to where
there's
I am
shortcut,
sonically. Right? Yeah. And everybody matures, musically at different times. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is.
You just mentioned the word choice, and I, in this series, I'd like to actually reflect on that word with people. Maybe rewind a little bit.
Okay.
You were in college, right? And you went to Texas to study.
Yep.
PR and journalism.
Yep.
So at that point, you're about to go a completely different direction, right? So what led you to... Or was it a choice, or was there any moment that you thought, I'm not going to do the PR marketing thing. I have to go for the other thing.
Yeah. I think it was just a slow build. I liked my studies. I liked my professors. I was inspired by what I was doing. I had a nice internship at a PR firm in San Francisco between my junior and senior year of college. And that was kind of when I decided I didn't want to do it. Not that there was anything wrong with the job or anything wrong with the company. I found myself sitting at my desk wishing I was playing music. And I eventually just had to succumb to that, or be honest with myself that, maybe I can be a professional.
But what helped you at that moment to make that choice? Or who?
Well, I mean, I always had a lot of friends that were playing and some were starting careers. And then, my parents were very supportive, and which is interesting because at the time they were both coming from a PR background themselves. They were kind of phasing out, sort of starting to get retired. But they said, look, just because we did it doesn't mean it's for you, you know, and they're both very creative people. My dad really is like a writer and my mom is actually an artist now.
So I saw it. She's a visual artist,
so
right?
That's her thing. And so
she recognized that choice or that urge, so to say, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the arts have always been very big in my family. Mm. Even if professionally we weren't all doing it together, you know, but I'm very grateful that they supported that and you know, let me kind of spread my wings as a guitar player. And so here we are. So
yeah, but
thanks, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, but I think that's for everybody a very important voice, right?
Absolutely.
You need, like, could go both ways. Like, should you do that? Or go for it.
Yeah,
right?
And you know, they were very supportive. And then, like I said, I had friends that were just like, yeah, you can do this. I can do it. If I can do this, you can do this kind of thing. But it was also important for me to build a network and have friends and colleagues that we're all sort of working towards the same goal of just like being full-time musicians, being employed as guitar players.
It is a job.
Or whatever. It's a job. Yeah. You know, just making that happen with a career. And so
talking with a Dutch guy.
Yeah.
About choices. It's all part of the job, man.
Yeah.
Hey, but it's funny that you said like, okay, I needed the confidence and I read some interviews with you and you talked about Joe Satriani, Steve Vai, and you listened to them and then you said, that gave me the confidence I could do that as well as an instrumental guitar player. A lot of people would say, if you listen to those guys and,
you get
they're
discouraged.
They're like, I'm never going to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the question you have to ask yourself. It's like when you hear something amazing, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
Do you learn from it? Do you get inspired by it or do you quit because of it? And everyone's different with the answer to that question. I'm very much of like,
yeah.
Me too. Right, guys.
But that's great, man. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know, I think hearing those players and so many of other, you know, Jeff Beck and John Scofield and Charlie Hunter and a lot of these other instrumentalists that became huge influences in my life. It was like, there's so many different ways to do this now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't need to sing necessarily and I can't. So it's probably, I'm limited in that respect. So I know that, I just need to kind of guitar with my voice and I'm going to use that to make the kind of music that I think is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully other people think it's cool. Cause I think it's cool.
Yeah.
You know,
but that again says something about you. I can do it.
Hey, you kind of have to have that attitude to, even if you're not an artist, so to speak. I mean, I don't like that term necessarily because I feel like anyone that is in the music business is an artist in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you're maybe you're a session player or you're an instructor or you're a freelance sideman, you know, that's artistry in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you still need that confidence to approach everything, to approach a lesson and have the confidence to inspire a student.
Mm-hmm.
That's artistry to me. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to have the confidence to step into a recording session and play your parts right or show up at an audition and, you know, get the gig. You have to have some level of confidence in the arts to do anything.
Probably nobody would show up.
Which is really hard to say. I know it's hard and it's hard and we all struggle with it, especially, you know, now there's so many ways to compare ourselves to people, social media and all that kind of stuff. And you do get jealous and you kind of beat yourself down about
who made you jealous.
Oh gosh. who doesn't? Probably most of the guests on your podcast, though. But,
they're all great, man. I'm stoked, but
so you use that as fuel to just do your own thing better than you did your own thing the next day, the previous day. So. Mm-hmm.
So some of them, because researching for all the guests that are going to show up, the name Eddie Van Halen comes back.
Of course.
A lot of times. Yep. Oh, light goes out here. Nobody hears it. But, we're sitting too silent.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out, because he touched so many people, right? And like, it's just not just the notes, but maybe also the whole personality, right? And the whole feeling behind it. Do you agree? And what did his playing mean to you?
Absolutely. I agree with everything you just said. And you know, I'm not a Van Halen disciple in the sense that I can play every single Eddie Van Halen solo and every single Van Halen riff. I mean, I know a few of them, but for me, it was always just about like, I just love this music. I love the way it makes me feel. I love hearing the sound of the instruments. I love hearing these four people play together. I just loved the songs. I loved the whole package of all of it. It just made sense.
Because I saw, like, because you're in other podcasts and interviews, and you're sitting in your room with your camera from your computer, and you can see actually it's a Dutch magazine then a cover guitarist Dutch
with
magazine
Eddie on the cover.
With Eddie on the cover, right? Well, it's in your room.
Yeah, so that was actually really cool because Eddie was on the cover, and I had an interview in there, so my name was on the cover with Eddie. I mean, just such a singular sort of iconic, that's word's been thrown around a lot, but he was just a very singular voice on the instrument and a pioneer and did it his way or the highway, really. And I mean, really, I think him and Jimi Hendrix are the two sort of pillars of the progression of electric guitar. You know, I think anyone of my generation is pretty much just still building on something that Eddie Van Halen was starting to do in the 70s.
Yeah, right. But that's the amazing thing about the guitar, right? As well, that can happen. It's just 10 fingers and a brain and a guitar, right?
And it was at a time in society and culture where rock guitar was still sort of the zeitgeist of the world, you know, and that's why he was able to be such a big star too, you know. I don't know if we'll ever see that again. And that's all right.
Yeah, right. I mean, stardom, well, there's a whole, probably people don't talk that much about it right now, right? Looking back on Eddie Van Halen's life, but he had his struggles, obviously, right? So Eddie's in your room, and I saw also there's a culling toy of probably your kid or something lying around.
Who knows what's there now.
So how you spend your days there, right? I mean, if you're obviously on tour in Europe, do you spend a lot of time with your kid when you're back home or how do your days look like?
I do. It's pretty almost like 9 to 5, as you could say. I mean, my kid's in school, so we get up at 6:30 in the morning. And if you're listening, American education system, we're sending our kids to school way too early in the morning. This is
same
ridiculous. Kindergartner should not have to go to school at 7:50 in the morning.
Oh, man.
It's a punishment. It's a crime. So anyway, so I'm up early. You know, we get kid going, get the breakfast going, take her to school. Then usually I'll go back. My wife might go to work, or maybe she has the day off. I'll go to my studio and just start working.
That's at home, right?
Yeah. Correct. It's at home. Then that could mean creative stuff. Like I'm trying to write something or work on a project of mine, or I'm doing sessions for a client, or I'm making a video, or I'm working on a course, or I'm answering emails, you know, doing logistical things for tours. And I kind of just do that throughout the day. I'll, you know, maybe take a break and go for a bike ride or some kind of workout or whatever, make lunch, I don't know. And then, sometime in the afternoon when the kid's getting out of school, I shut down for a minute and I'm dad for a while. It's dinner time, hangout time, play time, you know, then she goes to bed, hopefully at the time she's supposed to go to bed.
That happen? Never.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then just kind of depending on what I need to do, sometimes I'll go back to work and work until maybe 10 or 11, or I'll just not do anything and just hang around. So it just differs week to week just on kind of what I have on the plate. But I like to work during the day. I'm not one of those musicians that's like starting at 11 a.m. and works till, it starts at 11 p.m. and works till 6 a.m. and then sleeps all day. Like that never worked for me. So.
And because you say it's almost just like a job and office hours, how you give room for inspiration on a day like that? Because
Sure. I mean, the inspiration comes all the time at any point. If I want to be inspired, you know, I can look and find a way to be inspired by something, even if I'm not doing anything musical. And then usually kind of just the way that my brain works, if I know I have an idea lying around, if I poke and prod at it, I'm going to work on it, you know, for a while. But I usually always take an idea and work up until the point where I feel satisfied with it. At that point, it might not be finished, but I feel satisfied with it enough that I can set it aside and know that when I can come back to it when I'm a little fresh and then work a little bit more, you know, and then work a little bit more and then it's finally done. You know,
it seems like you're quite disciplined in that way to or
maybe so. I could be more disciplined. I think I could probably, I mean, I'd like to kind of get to a point where I'm like maybe scheduling the writing time or scheduling the recording time, but I'm not there yet.
And it's maybe stupid word too. Steve Vai once said, well, discipline, he says, if something thing's pulling me, then it's not discipline. He says, then I just have to do it.
I would agree with that.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. Yeah. And sometimes you think, today I'm going to do this, but then you all of a sudden play something and you're just like, oh shoot, I have to do whatever this is telling me to do now. So,
it's also strange that a guitar can feel different every time, right? Because you have days, I play a little bit, can't have a name, but sometimes I feel like,
feels
exactly, good. And sometimes like, why is
some days I don't want to play guitar, you know, that's fine. Like it's okay. You know, I have friends that like bring guitars on vacation and I'm like, what are you doing?
Well, campfire. Or they're shredding right next to the campfire.
No, it's like these guys bring their I've done it before. I've done it before, but yeah, sometimes just getting away from it is great.
Sorry, man. Now I have the image of you shredding at a campfire.
So. Oh, no. Well, I don't like traveling with acoustic guitars anyway. Too bulky, but you know what? If you don't travel with a guitar, gives you an excuse to check out the local guitar shop.
Ah,
and then maybe come home with something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I saw the wall's too small, right, for the guitars.
Yes, should have got a bigger room. Oh well.
So who's your first audience usually? Because you said, okay, I work at home. Is it your wife and your kids?
Yeah, they hear everything for the most part. My kid told me that. She really liked one of my songs, but thought it was too long. And I was like, I want to be like, you're six. You have the attention span of a 6-year old. But then I was like, you know what? Nowadays, most 36 year olds have the attention span of a 6-year old.
Nobody has attention span whatsoever anymore, right?
So, I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, they hear everything. And then occasionally I'll share some demos with friends or something, or maybe, you know, some of the guys in my band, like, check this out. But, and then, you know, I guess I post stuff on Instagram sometimes, maybe things that I'm working on just to keep people interested and stuff like that. But if I'm making an album, then really nobody hears the whole thing till it's out, of course, you know, aside from my inner circle.
Yeah. But hey, I have a feeling because we went back to you being in college and you sitting in a PR firm reflecting like... what I find also interesting about you as a musician and you as a player is that, like, it's also kind of a mix of like proper studying, right? Like, as if you went to conservatory, and self exploration of the instrument,
sure,
right?
Sure.
What did that path give you, like, to have it in a way?
Yeah,
both ways, right?
Well, I had some great private teachers growing up. You know. So they were very instrumental in teaching me the proper way to do things, or at least getting me on a path with enough technical knowledge to then discover on my own. I think that's what I would definitely be grateful, or that's what I'm grateful to them for, that because it was never taught in a way that felt strict. Mm-hmm. It was just like, here's this. Now you can do whatever you want with it.
That's great. Which is what a good teacher should do.
That was helpful. I mean, there's certain things maybe about music school that I would have liked to maybe had learned, like arranging for instruments beyond, you know, like classical instruments and I guess I could probably figure out how to do that if I wanted to sit, but I don't know if I have the patience. or just be better at sight reading and all that kind of stuff. I'm thankful for the type of music education that I had, because that's how I got here. I think, you know, I'm a product of what I what I studied. So I guess it worked in some regard.
I tried because some of the guests have their own courses.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm trying to emerge in all those courses, including yours.
Yeah.
That's the one that's on Jamplay. And it's what do you learn yourself, by the way, by teaching?
Well, it's hard because a lot of times, and I know everyone struggles with this when they get asked how they do something, is that eventually they're just like, I don't know, man, I just do it.
Yeah.
But that's not an appropriate answer.
Yeah.
Maybe it is, but it did kind of force me to sort of break down what it is I do and try to explain it in a simple way, in a digestible way. And not just the, and then you just do it.
I mean, I have to think of Ingrid Malmsteen, like back in the day, had this video, like, a lick very slowly.
Sure.
And then like, what?
Right. Yeah, you can't really get away with that now because, and it's probably good because, now when you make a course there, you have to have the transcriptions, you have to have the backing tracks, you have to have the ability to slow down the backing or whatever it is. And so all the different courses that I do all have kind of a different focus, but they're all still kind of related to my sound and my approach and stuff like that. So, I try to make them for musicians who are just maybe trying to find something new or refine something that they already know. And there's some skills in there that I think working professionals could still use too. It's been great. It's been a nice thing. And, kind of takes the place of doing one-on-one lessons because I don't do that anymore.
You did that in the past?
I've done it in the past. Yeah. I've done a lot of Zoom and Skype lessons and taught kind of in person for a little bit, but, I think the courses actually are a little bit more my speed of explaining things. I think being a guitar teacher is I wouldn't credit myself as that, but like great guitar teachers, they have a real gift for education. I don't know if I'd have that.
yeah, that's interesting. You might, because you can be a great guitar player and a lousy teacher, right?
Sure. Yeah. You can. But yeah, teaching is hard. And I think a lot of, you have to be consistent with your students. You have to have something for them every week. You have to have, you have to have goals for them, even if they don't have goals for themselves sometimes. So shout out to the real teachers out there.
Yeah. And can be, can give you a lot of energy if it goes well with the student, but can be demotivating as well, right? Like, oh man,
are we
wasting our time?
Right. Sure. Yeah, sure.
But, people don't hear, see this, but it's mainly audio on the podcast.
Okay.
I like to, you just mentioned like classical instrument you're going to play with the orchestra this year as well, right? How does it make you feel? Like, is that can be quite impressing, I suppose, right?
I mean, I got that email and I was like, wow, I've always wanted to play.
So just for
can we tell the reference?
Because this is going to be aired after it's going to be known.
Okay.
You're going to play with the Metropole Orchestra.
Yeah, with the Metropole Orchestra, and we're doing a set of my music and I couldn't ask for anything more.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of them. We did a record with them, meaning Snarky Puppy, did an incredible album with them, and they're just so cool and they groove so hard.
and
I'm very, very excited to hear my music with strings and horns and percussion and all that kind of stuff.
Are you going to be involved also with the whole orchestration of it all? Like,
I assume at some point there will be some conversations. The arranger is Jokin. I can't remember his last name.
Yeah, from Finland.
Yes. And so I'm sure we'll get on some calls and talk. But at the end of the day, I want that their artistry to shine. So whatever they want to do with it is cool with me. Just point at me when you need me to solo or something. So I sent in a list of about 10 or 11 songs that I thought could work. And then I have like maybe one or two unreleased kind of demos that I thought that have more possibilities for instrumentation than maybe my quartet would handle. So we'll see if maybe we can throw one of those out there, but we got some time. It's in June.
but I can imagine that these kind of moments, keep you going, right? Like something new happening the whole time,
yes,
right?
Yes. And it's kind of crazy how things like that work out, because sometimes you think, what am I going to do this year? And then something like this comes around.
Yeah, right.
So I'm very grateful for that and very excited about it. It's going to be really fun.
So you also mentioned in an interview once that you kind of write quite slowly, right? I mean, it takes time.
Sometimes, yeah.
Or but are you constantly writing then? Because we just talked about a little.
Yes and no. I mean, some songs have happened very quickly or something, and other songs have taken years. And that's just the way. Oops.
It's
funny. just waving around. There we go. You just have to let each song take its own pace. And, I try to be conscious of, like, is this an idea I've done a million times? Do I need to do it again in this kind of context or something? Mm-hmm. But, and so that could be hard to think that you're reinventing your own wheel every time you want to make some music. But, I'm learning to hear that there are little patterns and idiosyncrasies in my writing and little trademarks, so to speak, that are just going to be there no matter what. So I'm okay with that at this point. Mm. But, I also think that I bet if I forced myself to write more, I would. And I kind of had a bit of a catharsis over the last couple of years, because I was sort of looking at my social media output and thinking, like, wow, like, you've spent a lot of time on videos or gear demos or just ideas or something, or little fun things that you spend an afternoon on, which have been great. It's helped build a profile and engage me with fans and that sort of thing. And I'm thankful for that. But I'm also thinking, what if I had spent that time making songs, albums?
But that is, it is a difficult challenge for everybody, I guess, right?
Yeah. There's only so many hours in the day and
to focus.
Yeah. Focus. And we live in an era now where artists are also content creators, which I kind of... makes me nuts sometimes, but
goes both ways, right? Because there's so many great stuff out there, and you're like constantly like, "Wow, that's great!"
Yeah,
but it's keeps you out of the moment, or just yourself and your guitar.
Yeah, and so now if you got real eagle ears and you've followed some of my social media accounts, you might hear some ideas from those little snippets in songs because I was like, you know what, this was good. This isn't. This wasn't just a throwaway Instagram video. Like, there was something good here.
Yeah.
And so I catalog everything, and sometimes the nuggets of tunes come out of places that you thought maybe they weren't existing in. So, but I did. I was like, maybe the stuff that is my sort of throwaway stuff is actually cool.
I need to kind of
do something with it,
So bring it to the orchestra. They'll make something cool out of it.
They probably will. That's guaranteed.
Hey, before we wrap it up, I'd like to talk about your band.
Cool.
How's your relationship with them?
Well, which band?
Yeah, well, the one,
the guys that are
the
here.
Guys you're here with.
Oh yeah, well, we're here with the Mark Lethierry group.
Yeah,
and
them.
They're awesome. Yeah, I mean, we're just buddies. Mm. We're homeboys. We all play together when we're off the road, just in different, as session players or what have you. And it's a fun hang. We've been together for a while. JT, the drummer, and Wes, the bass player, have been with me since the beginning.
Mm.
They played on my first record, and a lot.
They're
of
them, both great.
Oh, they're unbelievable.
Yeah, right.
I'm just thankful that they want to play my weird music. They were, around when we were playing to four people, in the some burger joint in the Redwoods in California, years ago.
Four people. And now it's going to be 4,000 people saying they're there, right?
That would be lovely. they are a very integral part of what it is that I do. And I write with them in mind, hopefully they're available for the sessions and the gigs, and then Daniel Porter, the keyboard player, is a fantastic, young keyboard player, who I met kind of through the scene in Dallas. And, he's added a nice element because I've always had keyboards on my records, but just played the songs as trio just for logistical reasons, really. And I like the trio element. I feel like the songs can hold up as trio, but having the keyboard there, of course, adds an extra thing. Plus, there's an extra soloist now. Mm. I mean, everyone solos, but sometimes somebody's got to play the bass for most of the song. So Wes isn't soloing on every tune, but
But his groove by itself is awesome. Just feels like a solo.
Exactly. Right. You know. So it's nice to maybe not take all the guitar solos, even if the album has a guitar solo, maybe the live version has a keyboard solo or something like that. So it's a fun group. But
it's interesting that you say, if I write music, I have them in mind.
There's a lot of my circle of musicians. Anyone, if you look on the liner notes of any of my records, I'm writing with all those people in mind, because really at the end of the day, they're my biggest influences. I don't know if they know that, but I'm very much influenced by the people I play with, maybe even more so than my heroes, so to speak. So
that's interesting, because you have some musicians who worked completely the other way around, like somebody like Frank Zappa, for instance. He did what he did, and like whoever could play it.
Yeah.
And some people could.
And some people could.
Like, right? But it kind of seems like the other way around, and you're like very close to those people.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that in your music.
I do. And there's certain sounds that I look for, and certain feel and things like that. I think for me, it's important to, now, of course, there's probably stuff that I've written that I've given to them and maybe forced them into a corner to play it.
But oh yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they tell me.
Oh yeah.
But in that regard, that kind of challenge is fun, to try to pull something out of somebody that maybe they didn't think they had, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable writing knowing I have a great stable of people that are interested in playing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but thankfully. I can imagine that's also some sort of a compliment, so to say, right? To not you as a musician, but you as a person, to invest and be there with you along
the
way.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I know they're not in it for the money. At least not right now.
Yeah.
So soon it's getting there. But, that's the life we chose as instrumentalists, isn't it? But, all this to say, it's been a really cool journey having all of them be a part of what we do. And I'm kind of like, well, when are you going to do a solo album? You know, I want to play on your record.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's what will happen next.
Is it like, because now you as a solo artist, you're gaining familiarity. Oh man, my English sometimes is like,
It's better than my Dutch.
Yeah. Is it? So with Snarky Puppies, like, sometimes a puzzle, like, okay, when are we going to do what? Because now you as a solo artist are, well,
sure,
you're much more familiar than 10 years ago, so to say, right?
Well, I'm still definitely involved in the band but that's Michael's band.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he ultimately is going to decide what we do every year and that kind of albums that we make. I make it a priority to be a part of as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a pretty open understanding between all the members that people have other things. Mm. And I think that was actually Michael's, he always kind of wanted that. Mm. I think he wanted freedom. And if the band enabled people to have a platform to do other stuff, he's always supported that.
Mm.
You know, the result is now we have a big band because we need people to cover the slots or whatever. Mm. But, it's kind of like the perfect gig, because I can kind of come and go as I please in a sense, but I try not to take advantage of it. You know what I mean? But,
don't say it out loud.
Yeah. Well, I just did, but it's fine. He knows.
Yeah.
They always know they can count on me if they need something, but, I have no reason to not do it. Right. And so I'm just excited to, you know, we've got some dates coming up this year, and then I think we are going to do another record maybe in 2025. I don't want to say that and be wrong, but that band will keep going until there's no one left to do it, I think. So it's all good things.
Hey, you just said pushing somebody in the corner. I don't want to really do that, but I'm just curious. My next guest will be Mike Dawes.
Cool.
You know him, right?
Yeah. Well, I've never met, but man.
But as he's like a player.
Yeah, for sure.
What would you like to ask him if you would, because I can ask him something like,
I'd be interested to hear how he just comes up with his arrangements. where he's going to put the bass part versus the melody part, how he fingers that kind of stuff. He did this arrangement of Jump that was like totally nuts. And, but you know, a player like that, where he's so virtuosic and we're so totally different that I almost don't even want to know.
Okay.
I would rather just watch him play and hear him play and be like, it's, there's no point in me trying to figure this out.
So
dude.
I'm going
to
ask and I'm not going to ask.
No, I mean, I mean that like, it's like, dude, what you're doing is so your own thing and beyond anything I could comprehend. So I will just be a fan and a listener.
Okay. Good question.
Well, that's, it's a statement.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Hey, Mark, 40 minutes flew by.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, okay. Thanks so much for your time and being here and having this chat.
Totally,
and,
dude.
Thanks, everybody, who listened to this as well.
Thanks for listening.